was Michael. No Michael? No relentless pressure. Nobody holding them accountable and demanding unyielding excellence. Some of those guys went on to have outstanding careers in other arenas. Steve Kerr and John Paxson, to name a couple. But most of the others couldn't keep themselves at the level they were at when they were playing up to Michael's expectations. But don't be fooled. A true cleaner isn't thinking about making you better for your benefit. He's happy for you if you get something out of it. But whatever he's doing, it's for his sake, not yours. His only objective is putting you where he needs you to be, so he can get the results he desires. Look at Miami's 2012 championship season. You can talk all you want about LeBron stepping up in that final game, but without Dwayne's putting him in that position, it couldn't have happened. Remember, a closer can take the winning shot, but the cleaner gets him on the team and makes sure the ball is in his hands when it needs to be there. That sums up Dwayne and LeBron completely. Just as Michael did with his teammates, the cleaner deciding what a closer will do, Dwayne knew he had to hold back all season so LeBron could step up. No question about it. That's a cleaner crafting a plan. If I do this, then he'll do that, and in the end, we win. And in Dwayne's case, it was even more genius when you remember he was playing on a severely damaged knee that limited what he could do himself. So he put everyone else in place to do it for him. Mission accomplished. You don't question the methods. You just look for the results. Dwayne was the mastermind of that team, and LeBron played the role he was sent to play. I just can't look at it any other way. Dwayne was like a father lion. LeBron was the baby lion. And the baby lion knew that whatever he did, he always had the father lion right there, just in case. And when Dad needed to step in and protect the family, he did. And the baby went right along doing whatever he was supposed to do. You take Dwayne off that team, they can't win that championship. It doesn't matter how skilled LeBron is. Without Dwayne's leadership, the 2012 Big Three Heat would have been just another team loaded with talent and no rings. But you'll never hear Dwayne say any of that or take any credit because, in his mind, that was his job. A great leader knows the best way to get people to raise their performance is to put them where they can truly excel, not just where you want them to excel. Cleaners don't block others from reaching the top with them if they're capable and ready. And as LeBron evolves as a leader and potential cleaner, eventually he can take over responsibility for putting a winning team on the floor. Few people can be exceptional at everything, so sometimes you have to experiment before you find the right result, a process that could have led to Michael's playing center in the NBA. Before the 1984 NBA draft, the Portland Trail Blazers called Bob Knight, who was coaching the U.S. Olympic basketball team that summer, which included Michael, and asked his opinion on whom they should take with the second pick in the draft. Everyone knew Houston would take Hakeem Olajuwon with the first pick, but no one, including Portland, was sure whether Portland would take Sam Bowie or Michael Jordan with the second pick. "Take Jordan," said Knight. "Right," said Portland, "but we need a center." "Play him at center," Knight said. Michael could probably have done it, too, but most people don't have that option. You have to look at your teammates, your employees, and see what they can do, not what they can't. People who evaluate talent will always take the negative. "He can't do this. He can't do that." Okay, what can he do? He got this far for a reason. How did he get here? We've established what he can't do, so let's stop waiting for him to do it. Let's find out what he can do and put him in the system where he can succeed. Everyone is given some ability at birth. Not everyone finds out what that ability is. Sometimes you find it on your own, sometimes it has to be shown to you. Either way, it's there. At the same time, there are abilities you are not given. Our challenge in life is to use the abilities we have and to compensate for the abilities we don't have. It's completely instinctive. We compensate in order to survive. Individuals with limited vision frequently have heightened hearing. People with certain disabilities discover they have extraordinary talents in other areas. Something is given, and something is taken away. I know countless athletes who are blessed with incredible physical gifts, height, skill, strength, speed, but no work ethic, or no support system, no way to use or develop or take advantage of those skills. Successful people compensate for what they don't have. Unsuccessful people make excuses, blame everyone else, and never get past the deficiencies. A true leader can see past those deficiencies, identify the abilities, and get the most out of that individual. A cooler wonders what's going to happen. A closer watches things happen. But a cleaner makes things happen. I got deep into this discussion with a client during one of those in-case-of-emergency-break-glass meetings during the playoffs. The entire time we were together, we just talked. No physical stuff. Zero. Didn't stretch him before the game. Didn't warm him up. Didn't go to the gym. Just sat around and talked. He was upset with some of his teammates, frustrated by what he believed they couldn't do. When you're so extraordinary at your craft, when your talent is so natural and your skills so elevated, it's hard to understand that not everyone is like you and can do what you do. It's not a matter of their trying more or working harder. They really just can't do it. And if it's not handled right, it will destroy your entire team, or office, or wherever you have elite performers surrounded by less gifted colleagues. We talked about every guy on the team, focusing on all the players' strengths instead of their weaknesses. I told him that as the leader, his job was to recognize his players' talents and put them in situations where they could use those talents. Yes, we know this guy might mentally check out, and that guy isn't going to take a shot under pressure. We know this guy can deliver during the regular season, but in the playoffs, he's going to look like the D-League player he really is. So don't put the player in a position where it will matter. Work with the strengths, and everything else you get beyond that will be a bonus. You control this. Take charge of the situation and make it work in your favor. But, I added, you also have to recognize you're so competitive that you're crushing them with your disapproval. You don't realize the impact you have on everyone else because your wiring is completely different. When you're shaking your head or yelling at them, they shut down. And I know you love these guys, so they need to feel that you're backing them, not turning against them. I'm not doing that, he said. Yes, you are. When you say something to an individual and then turn away before he can respond or make a comment back to you, you're making your point and you're not letting him have his say. You have to see how someone reacts so you know what's coming next. Is his head down? Is he angry? Are you motivating him or doing the opposite? When you hit someone with a negative attack, it doesn't energize him, it just brings him down. You're not going to win these guys over by making them feel worthless. He got it. By the next game, he was literally meeting his teammates at half court, patting them on the ass, showing his support, and if that's what it takes, that's what you have to do. But for any leader, it's hard to resist the temptation to take over and just get things done. Kobe's job is to get 30 to 40 points per game. As soon as you tell him to start worrying about other players, getting their points, and feeling involved, you're pulling him out of his game. Obviously, it's also his job to lead the team, but his main focus can't be on how many shots the other guys are taking. Let them worry about that. Let them come up to your level. Remember, when a cleaner gives you an opportunity, be ready, because he won't ask you again if you blow it. It's easier for him to just do the job himself. And if he's going down with the ship, he's going to make sure he's the captain. A cleaner's job is to take control and determine what has to happen to get results. You have a coach telling you this, players wanting that, but if you're the guy in the middle with the responsibility and the talent, all fingers are pointing at you, win or lose. Not just in sports, but in anything. When you're the guy they hired to make things happen, those things better happen or you won't be that guy for long. You are responsible. If there's going to be a mistake, you have to be the one to make it so you can turn it around immediately and get everyone back on track. It's all on you. But as that guy, you also need to have everybody else, all the chemistry, going the same way with you. For every chief, there has to be a tribe. And at some point, you have to let everyone in the tribe experience what it's like to be the chief, so they can all see the intricacies and issues and texture of what happens at the top and recognize what's happening in the big picture rather than getting stuck in their own little scenes. And usually, as soon as you give them the entire view and tell them it's theirs to manage, every little detail and personality and weakness and strength, as soon as you give them that moment of complete power and control, most of them say, no thanks. Easier to stay where they're at. Safe and comfortable. No one knows that better than the coaches, who not only have to figure out the tribe, but manage the chiefs as well. The good ones understand the dynamic. Let your cleaners do their thing. Those who can't give up that control eventually coach themselves out of a job. A cleaner player needs a cleaner coach, because they'll understand and respect what each other has to do. Cleaners never sell each other out. They just let the other guy take care of business. Phil understood what he had to do with Michael. You respect my job, I'll respect yours. Run a couple of plays that I need you to run, and then have at it. Phil never sought relationships with his players. He just put them in situations where they could succeed, and he didn't try to make people do what they couldn't. He's not an X and O guy. He's all about total instinct and gut feel for the game. He sees personalities and measures what they can do. With Pat Riley, another cleaner, it's all about the end result. That's why he's been so successful. You have to do it his way, and if you don't, he's going to make you do it his way. For a while, there was a lot of buzz that if Eric Spoelstra didn't coach the Heat to a title, Riley would come down to the floor and take over the job himself. The players were so fearful of that, they figured they'd better get it done for Spoelstra, who was merely tough, as opposed to Riley, who is a competitive juggernaut. Easier to deal with the apprentice than the master. Doug Collins is the best X and O guy I've ever known. He sees everything three plays ahead of everyone else, and no one else realizes what's coming. Then he puts everyone in strategic situations that appear to make no sense until the entire play unfolds, and suddenly, everything materializes. His basketball mind is off the charts. But sometimes he forgets that not everyone can do that. Guys like Riley, the Van Gundys, and Tom Thibodeau in Chicago, they tell you how it is and expect you to do it their way, which can create friction with some of the big-money superstars who don't want to do it that way. You tell these guys they're having 3-hour practices, 2-hour shoot-arounds, and pretty soon the players start to mutiny. They hear about other teams having shorter practices, less work. Now, they're questioning why they have to work so hard. You can get away with that when players are younger. But a lot of the veterans and guys who've already won something don't want to deal with it. So you'd better be winning, or your players won't buy into your philosophy. Mike Krzyzewski and I have a good relationship. We spent a lot of time talking over the years. He's the best at bringing in players who he knows will work in his system. He thinks, I have this big stud here, that guy with a high basketball IQ over there, this guy with the jump shot. and he pieces them together so it all works. They're not always the most gifted athletes, but he knows exactly what will work for his team, recognizes what they can do, and puts them in situations where they can shine. That's why he's been such a great coach for the Olympic teams. He puts people where they need to be, not just where they want to be, which is a frequent challenge when you're dealing with a dozen superstars. John Calipari goes the other way. He wants the best athletes out there so he doesn't have to mastermind anything. A different way of achieving the same result, winning, but relying more on the player's ability to excel without a lot of coaching or teaching. But regardless of how you build that team, any team, in sports or business or any endeavor, no matter how you snap the pieces into place, you need that one guy who never needs a fire lit under him, who commands respect and fear and attention, and demands that others bring the same excellence to their performance that he demands of himself. He doesn't have to be the most skilled or gifted guy on the team, but he establishes an example that everyone else can follow. The only way you can light other people on fire is to be lit yourself from the inside. Professional, cool, focused. If you had a bad night, and you can't show up the next day ready to go, or you can't show up at all, that doesn't affect just you, it affects everyone around you. A professional doesn't let other people down just because of personal issues. If you need to show up, you show up. You might detest every individual in the room, but if your presence makes them all feel better, if it pulls the team together, if it results in better performances, then you've helped yourself to get one step closer to your own goal. That's how you get others to come up to your level. Show them where it is, and set the example that allows them to get there. When you're a cleaner, you make decisions, not suggestions. You know the answer, while everyone else is still asking questions. Three things you will never hear me talk about in a good way: inner drive, passion, and whether the glass is half full or half empty. You know what they all have in common? They all translate into, I thought about it and did nothing. What the hell is inner drive? Inner drive is nothing more than thought without action, internal wanderings that never hit the pavement to go anywhere, completely worthless until those thoughts become external and convert to action. What good is the drive on the inside? Where are the results? People who preach inner drive are dreamers with a lot of ideas and a lot of talk, and zero production. They tell you everything they're going to do, and then they do nothing. That's inner drive. Let's move on. Passion. A strong feeling or emotion for something or someone. Very nice. Now what? Are you just feeling it, or are you going to do something about it? I love hearing motivational speakers tell people to follow your passion. Follow it? How about work at it? Excel at it? Demand to be the best at it? Follow it? But my favorite, the timeless debate over whether some invisible glass is half full or half empty. This is a concept invented by someone suffering from the complete inability to make decisions. Half full or half empty? You have something in the glass, or you don't. If you like what's there, add more. If you don't, pour it out and start over. Otherwise, you're just staring at this non-existent glass thinking, damn, there's no way to decide. Bullshit. Of course there's a way to decide. You just don't want to commit to a decision. As soon as someone starts with the half-full, half-empty analysis, you know you're in for a long debate about nothing with someone who can't or won't make a choice. To me, it's the equivalent of a guy standing in the middle of a busy intersection crying, I don't know. Well, everyone around him screams, get out of the street. Trust yourself. Decide. Every minute, every hour, every day that you sit around trying to figure out what to do, someone else is already doing it. While you're trying to choose whether to go left or right, this way or that way, someone else is already there. While you're paralyzed from overthinking and overanalyzing your next move, someone else went with his gut and beat you to it. Make a choice, or a choice will be made for you. Most people don't want to make decisions. They make suggestions, and they wait to see what everyone else thinks so they can say, it was just a suggestion. They know the right answer, but can't act because if something goes wrong, they'll have to take responsibility and then they can't blame anyone else. Meanwhile, someone else is going to make a decision, and when it works, he's getting all the credit. And maybe the choice he made isn't one that works for anyone but him, but since no one else took charge, too bad for everyone else. A cleaner makes decisions because there's no chance in the world he's going to let anyone else make a decision for him. He may ask your opinion and add it to everything else he knows, but he's not going to do what anyone else tells him. He's still going to follow his own instincts. And once he decides, it's set in stone. He doesn't care what anyone else thinks of his choice, and he's going to live with the outcome. He decides, and then he acts. I'll give credit to the Coolers for this. They have the flexibility and willingness to rethink their decisions and change directions if you give them a reason. A cleaner will just tell you to fuck off. You can waste a lifetime sitting around overthinking possible ways to look at something. On one hand, but on the other hand, and then on this hand. Stop it. You only have two hands, and that's already too many. One guy is telling you, think positive, while someone else is saying, I don't mean to be negative, but I don't believe in thinking positive or thinking negative. Plenty of experts have made a lot of money taking a stand on this. Good for them, but keep them away from my players. The positive thinkers want you to only visualize your success. The negative thinkers want you to focus on everything that could go wrong. Well, visualizing anything doesn't make it a reality, and overthinking imaginary problems just generates fear and anxiety. I want you armed with reflexes and instinct, not Xanax. You'll never hear me say, we have a problem. We might have a situation that needs to be addressed, or an issue we have to resolve, but never a problem. Why automatically cast something as a negative? Instincts don't recognize positive or negative. There's only a situation, your response, and an outcome. If you're ready for anything, you're not thinking about whether it's a good situation or a bad situation. You're looking at the whole picture. And if you are thinking about it, you're out of the zone, distracted, and wasting energy and emotion, instead of focusing only on what you have to do. Thinking doesn't achieve outcomes. Only action does. Prepare yourself with everything you'll need to succeed, then act. You don't need 100 people to back you up and be your safety net. Your preparation and your instincts are your safety net. You suddenly get a great idea. Something completely comes alive in your mind. You mention it to a couple of people, and they stare at you blankly. Suddenly, you lose all your enthusiasm. Why? It's still the same idea you loved a few hours ago. What happened? Stop thinking. After that first initial thought, that first instantaneous gut reaction, why give in to the weakness of second-guessing and doubt and analysis that inevitably follow? Are you listening to others or to your own instincts? Are you taking advice from people who know what they're talking about, or those who only see failure? As soon as you allow yourself to start overthinking your decisions, you start saying things like, I'll sleep on it, or let's put it on the back burner, or any one of the stupid clichés that mean I don't trust myself to make a decision. Back burner? The back burner is for cooling things. You've just cooled a hot idea, and then you'll forget about it altogether and quit, never knowing how close you might have been to success. Speaking of clichés, here's another tribute to indecision and apathy. Good things come to those who wait. No, good things come to those who work. I understand the value of not rushing into things. You want to be quick, not careless. But you still have to work toward a result, not just sit back and wait for something to happen. You can't wait. The decision you don't make on Monday will still be waiting for you on Tuesday. And by then, two new decisions will have to be dealt with, and if you still don't make those decisions, you'll have three more on Wednesday. Pretty soon, you're so overwhelmed by everything you still haven't dealt with that you become completely paralyzed and can't do anything. Meanwhile, as you sit back doing nothing, because you're afraid to make a mistake, someone else is out there making all kinds of mistakes, learning from them, and getting to where you wanted to be, and probably laughing at your weakness. And when you do finally force yourself to make a decision, what do you choose? Almost always you go back to your first reaction, the first thing you thought of when the whole process began. You already knew. Why didn't you trust yourself the first time? You can't rely on others to jump up and make your dreams happen. They have their own dreams. They're not worrying about yours. People might be willing to help if they can, but ultimately it's on you. Get the best people around you, know your strengths and weaknesses, and trust others to do what they do best. But in the end, it's still your responsibility. Make a plan and execute. What's your plan? Everything starts with a simple thought. Every idea, every invention, every plan, every creation, it started with a thought. But to bring the thought to life, you have to put a plan together. Starting a workout, training for a sport, launching a business. You can just think about it, or you can create the plan that will get you there. Be realistic. How much time do you have? How much time will you commit? Is it going to be a priority in your schedule, or are you going to fit it in around your other commitments? Make a plan that truly reflects your goals and interests, and you'll be more likely to execute. Why pretend you're going to work out every single day when you know you're only going to do it 3 times a week? You make a choice and stand by it. Most people can't do that. They're content to wing it or see what happens. Come on. You already know what's going to happen if you go into it that way. Whatever you start is going to fall apart. But that's what most people do. They test the waters before jumping in. Why? Unless you suspect those waters are churning with crocodiles, what's the worst thing that can happen if you take the plunge? You get wet. A cleaner thinks, no problem, I'll swim. Most people just stand at the edge, shivering and looking for a towel. Oh, you can't swim? Fine, then tell me what you can do. Why stand at the water's edge feeling sorry for yourself? Go a different way. Excel in another area, while everyone else is just competing for space in the same pool. You don't become unstoppable by following the crowd. You get there by doing something better than anyone else can do it, and proving every day why you're the best at what you do. You must know someone like this. He can do everything. This week he's a blogger and a songwriter and a motivator. Last week he was teaching tennis 2 nights a week and working as a sushi chef. And on the weekends he's rebuilding a 1955 Maserati. You listen to him and feel as if you've never done a thing in your life, until you listen more closely and discover that, like a lot of people, this is someone dabbling in a lot of things and succeeding at none. I listen to those people and think, as far as I can tell, The only thing you're good at is keeping busy. I want to hear someone say, I do this. Ask Kobe what he does, and he says, I give out numbers. Numbers? Yep, I gave them 80.